Today's scripture reading is John 21, verses 15 through 19. Jesus reinstates Peter. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said. "You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Again, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He answered, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Take care of my sheep." The third time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, "Do you love me?" he said. "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. Very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go." Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, "Follow me." The word of God for the people of God.
Well, we're on the back end of our Healing the Wound series. We've learned about the challenges of loving God with all of who we are, our head, our heart, our body. We've covered our head and our heart, so that leaves the body, which is where we're at today. And so we end each of these teaching times together on the importance of radical acceptance. Radical acceptance is an unexpected way we are able to overcome our compulsion to focus on being kind of completely stuck in our thinking, our feeling, and our sensing. It's a way to hopefully help release us from some of the hurt of younger years in order to become more balanced as adults and people, which in turn allows us to better worship God with our thinking, our feeling, and our sensing. I pat my gut because gut is also one of the words for kind of body and that instinct, right? And so today we're talking about those of you who might have received a wound that caused you to become stuck in your body, to be stuck in the sensing area. You might have been, not to name any names, because I don't know, you might have been the child who was called strong-willed, temperamental, defiant, and may have always needed to be right. Not that I have any of those in my congregation. Kim and I, we minimized our chance of this by having just one kid, right? Just one. This might have had something to do with why we just had one kid. When it was time to start thinking about possibly having another kid, like, do we have a second kid? Kim looked at me and she said, "Now, you know, our first one's been so good," right? "She sleeps well, she eats well, she listens well, she's pretty good-natured." And she looks at me and she says, "So you know what happens if we have another one," right? Now, I don't know who she'd been talking to that kind of fed her all that information, but it was a little bit of a legitimate fear of, you know, what if. Now, for me, because of who I am, I was more concerned about if we had more than one on you know, as a pastor, would I be able to provide for my family, you know, if we had a very big family. So that was my fear. And so between the two of us, it didn't take much to stop us at the one, right? Which you all laughed about, but some of you had a second, a third, or a fourth, and then later you looked at your spouse and said, "Maybe we should have stopped at one." Right? Some of you did that. So here, as we get into this, there is an adult. You're an adult now, but as a child, you might have thrown some temper tantrums, right? You might have been a temper tantrum child. And a temper tantrum child is generally this display of anger because the child wanted to get their way and didn't get it. The response of a child before a temper tantrum is generally something like this: "Well, you're not the boss of me." right? To which, as a parent, you might have heard or might have responded with, oh, yes, I am, right? I'm your mom, I'm your dad, I am the boss of you. That is usually the thing that triggered the meltdown, right? Was that kind of defiancy and you're returning the defiancy. One of the most dangerous homes, I think, to grow up in is the type of home where you have a body-wounded parent raising a body-wounded child. It is generally an explosion of colorful language and screaming and name-calling and possibly violence that you've ever seen if you were in one of these homes where this was going on. And it's not uncommon for both the parent and the child in this type of scenario to see themselves as the victim, both the adult and the child. And it's very difficult for either of them, generally speaking, to see things from the other person's perspective, and both of them have strong feelings of being disrespected by the other. Well, you're not respecting me. Well, you're not respecting me, right? And that's what leads to the clash. Now, this is not the only way that the wound to the body kind of comes up for these folks. It's just the most easy to spot and to name, the one that's most obvious. In ancient times, the way they talked about the body is they really talked about the body as being the place where our instincts are located. Instincts are here. They would say it is the physical, animalistic part of ourselves that tends to pursue what it desires. It is where the body is where our strength comes from. It's our ability to move, to act of our own free will, right? To do what it is you want to do. It was the place where anger was most commonly attributed to, was this kind of gut, body-ish, instinctual. When anger is released through the body, we tend to call it violence, right? When we do what anger really is boiling up inside of us. It's violence. Violence is the sin response to anger. It's what we do with our anger that generally gets us into trouble. People tend to become violent in order to get their way, to get what they want, or to demonstrate dominance over someone else. Like if you remember that from our kid days, right? Two kids squaring off, and it was really just who's the tougher kid, right? Like something has to be proved. People who are stuck in their body, they tend to be a bit like a caged animal, right? Kind of like this caged animal. They feel a bit like everyone's trying to control them, and so they, in the body, want to find a way to take power back. They are aware of power dynamics in a room and with people, and to release power or to be vulnerable, they're afraid that might be seen as a sign of weakness, that others might know that they're weak if they show vulnerability. And so body people are afraid to be seen as weak because of a quiet fear of being overpowered and being made to do something they really don't want to do. Now, if you're starting to wonder if this body wound might be something you're struggling with, if some of this is catching you, some of it's not, then here we go. You might be a body person if you have an instinctual understanding of the power dynamic in a room and where you are within it, right? You tend to measure yourself by the people around you. You might be a body person if you are type A, perfectionistic, and keenly aware of the right way to do things, and you tend to let people know when they aren't doing it the right way, which happens to be your way. You might be a body person if getting stuck behind a slow driver may cause you to momentarily and simultaneously lose your religion and your mind. I mean, you might read about me in the paper someday. Like, that's the one I can kind of identify with. You might be a body person if your opinion in a conversation tends to be the loudest opinion, right? You might be a body person if you like to argue in order to figure out what you believe about something or just to share what you believe. You tend to do it in kind of an argumentative way, right? You might be a body person if the best kind of work is physical work and you think that's the difference between you and most other people is that you do the work, right? And you might be a body person if anger was something that you used to struggle with, or it still does, it still consumes you, either anger at others, anger at the world, anger at those people, or even anger at yourself for not doing a better job, right? Just constant anger there. So the Apostle Peter, he is our greatest example of someone who was kind of fully invested in this body response to everything, in this body woundedness. Peter was bold and he was instinctive. I mean, we know that. He was a take-charge kind of guy. He tended to never be shy with his opinion and would tell you what he was thinking. And so in the Garden of Gethsemane, right, before Jesus is captured, before he's dragged off to Pontius Pilate where he stands trial, Peter was the one who drew his sword and went after a soldier and cut his ear off, right? He acted out in violence. He was ready for a fight. He was generally always ready for a fight, and it usually took Jesus kind of calming him down, pulling him off to settle him down. Which makes it really surprising when Peter betrays Jesus after he's arrested. Peter betrayed Jesus. Kind of similar, not in exactly the same way as Judas, but in a similar fashion. Peter, he goes out to investigate where Jesus is. He's been dragged off by the Sanhedrin. Where is he? What's going on? What's happened to him? And along the way, as Peter is investigating and moving into the courtyards of the temple, three times he is asked by different people, aren't you one of Jesus' disciples? Like, you're a friend of his, right? I think you are. To which he responds each time, no. I don't know him. I'm not one of his disciples. I'm not one of his friends. Which you need to pause and think about from the standpoint of somebody who's maybe got this body wound going on, right? Who doesn't want to end up like a caged animal? He doesn't want to, like, that's what happened to Jesus. Like, they dragged Jesus off, they put him in prison. Like, I don't want that to be me. I don't want to be caged. Or this body wound who doesn't want to get overpowered. And can often tell when a fight's not maybe winnable. It's like, you know, earlier we should have done this, not now. I'm outnumbered now. And so he lies. So instead of coming clean, Peter lies and denies his friendship to Jesus. And so in our learning passage today, Jesus is offering his friend Peter forgiveness for his lies and ultimately his betrayal. It's called the reinstatement of Peter, is what the passage is labeled. And so three times, Jesus says to Peter, Peter, do you love me? To which Peter responds, yes, Lord, you know I love you. And then Jesus says, then Peter, feed my sheep. Three times, Peter lied and denied that he knew Jesus. Three times, Jesus said, Peter, if you love me, then feed my sheep. Now, this whole feed my sheep thing, right? This whole feed my sheep thing. We presume Jesus is asking Peter to be a good shepherd to the people that Jesus was a shepherd to. Which, like the other type disciples, I mean, Peter just always struggled a bit with it. Like this whole love people thing, there was kind of a line. Jesus always took them kind of beyond that line, and they tried to not go there, but he would take them there. Jesus showed the disciples a new way to see people, to think about people, and to respond to people differently than what they had. But to top off Jesus' request, at the end of this passage, you've got this really weird prophetic message from Jesus to Peter, which seems kind of an odd comment to conclude the book of John with. Like, I think I would have ended with something stronger if it were me, but it is this thought that the Gospel of John chooses to end on. And what was read to us was, very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and you went where you wanted. When you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, follow me. You see, this is by far the worst thing, the hardest thing that someone with this wounded body sense could do. The hardest thing to do is to submit to the will of another. right? To follow someone else's lead, especially when following may lead you to a place you don't want to be. That's not the direction I want to go. And so Jesus says, Peter, if you follow me, if you care about the people that I cared about and be their shepherd, it will lead to your death, just like it led to my death. And Peter, you will go to that death peacefully. It's not a fight. It's not a battle. It's not a war. It's a peaceful surrender of your life because of your service to me. You know, I believe in my heart that the man, Peter, that spoke with Jesus that day and the man who died for Jesus much later in life was a very different man. He had to have been. I think after that last day with Jesus, Peter began to heal in a way that allowed him to follow Jesus after his death like he was never able to in Jesus' life. He couldn't do it yet. And so in that moment, Peter received a healing, a forgiveness that helped settle his anger and his desire to be in control of all things all the time. And so the Peter that we see in the book of Acts, in his two letters that are named after him, that are in the New Testament, appears to be a different man who had submitted himself to a greater authority, which is sometimes a bad word for folks with the body wound. Authority figure over me. The man who charged into battle and cut off this man's ear learns how to be at peace with all authorities of the world who he was once really ready to do battle with, and he wanted to do battle with. In 2 Peter, which was a letter written by an older Peter to a young church, he shares a message that demonstrates that he is, in fact, a changed man, healed by his trust in Jesus Christ. It says this, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as a supreme authority or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. For it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. Live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as God's slaves. Show respect to everyone. Love the family of believers. Fear God. Honor the emperor. Honor the emperor? Honor the emperor, the Roman emperor. The leader of the people who put Jesus Christ on the cross, submit to him? This, my friends, this is the evidence of a man who received a great healing. And in doing so, he learned to worship the Lord his God with all of his body and all of his heart and with all of his mind. And Peter gave all of himself over in full submission to the desires of God on his life. And this is exactly what radical acceptance looks like for people who desire to force their will and their control over their environment. It's just their natural way of being in the world. And the greatest problem is that God is doing things differently from how you would do them. Right? I mean, that's often the tension. God is using people, he is using leaders, he is using systems on this earth that make absolutely no sense to you. Don't feel bad, it doesn't make sense to most of us, right? Most of us watch the news and think, what on earth is going on? And so it feels to you, if you're one of these kind of body-wounded people, like God has maybe lost control of this situation and you must gain control over it, or the people, in order to make things work better. But friends, the body at peace has learned to trust the heart and the head too. It has learned to submit itself some to the authority of the heart and to the authority of the head. Though the body and the senses are uneasy about a scenario, the heart and the head help stabilize Christian awareness. I follow Jesus Christ. He is in control. I submit my life to that control and that authority. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And I believe this is what's happening, right? You know, anger is the response of someone who feels victimized. You won't victimize me or take an advantage of or manipulate it. I see what you're doing. You're trying to manipulate me, right? Peace is the response of one who knows they are a part of a bigger plan. And even if they don't fully understand the plan, they trust the one who does. Right? Radically accept the authority of Jesus Christ over your life and his direction for your life. And so this is the lesson to us from the Apostle Peter. The Apostle Peter, the rock, the foundation of the church, is who he is. Today, we stand upon the foundation that Peter's submission provided to us. His courage, his willingness to let go and follow Jesus Christ. So before we join in the welcoming prayer, we've read the welcoming prayer at the end of each message. I want us to pause for a moment before we read this. And if you have been stuck in your anger and in your insistence and in your way, then Jesus Christ asked you to turn these things over to him, right? Follow him instead of your violent hold upon this life. Instead, let Christ direct your steps and trust in him. So we'll pause. Let's just bow our heads. Let's all just take a moment to examine our lives, if this is true for us, and if we in fact need to submit all things over to the authority of Jesus Christ in our lives. And if you would lift your heads, and if you would join me in the reciting of the welcoming prayer this morning. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I welcome everything that comes to me in this moment because I know it is for my healing. I welcome thoughts, feelings, emotions, persons, situations, and conditions. I let go of my desire for security. I let go of my desire for approval. I let go of my desire for control. I let go of my desire to change any situation, condition, person, or myself. I open to the love and presence of God and his healing power and action within. Amen.